You know, as a yoga practitioner, I am very aware that when things are really tough and I need to see more clearly, I need to stand on my head. There's nothing like turning yourself and your world upside down to give you new perspective. So, what an opportunity when April Fool's Day and Easter and Passover provide this unbelievable convergence, this opportunity to turn it all upside down. The very first time that Easter arrived, one of the last times that Easter arrived on April Fool's Day was in 1956. Right. And it's only happened four times since 1900. And it won't happen again until 2029. So we are going to make the most out of this moment. How many of us think we'll even be alive by 2029? Hopeful. Oh, I know. It's also Passover. And so Jews, Christian, pagans, humanists, agnostics, all those nons out there, everyone is thinking about similar things. How many people heard Will Shortz get fired on NPR this morning? Did you think it was for real? I'm driving and I'm going, oh my God. And they took so long before they revealed April Fool's. If I were Will, I would have liked left. I don't know what I would have done. So all these holidays are about escaping what enslaves us. They're about practicing being a trickster, about saying something in a way that maybe has never been said before to shake things up, to wake things up. It's about stepping into a moment of risk, risking being a fool, risking not having that polished, professional, whatever it is we think is smart and right, just leaving it all behind. Jesus was a trickster. He was a holy fool. In everything historically that it is known that he said, he talked in parables, he made jokes, he made fun of the world around him, all to shake it up, to prove that there was a more just, equitable way. His methods were considered subversive. He was viewed as a dangerous person, and he brought a message of change. He gave his life away in that extent of dying in some national disgrace for his time. And in terms of all the people around him, he was a failure. And his wisdom was in his ability to accept that failure and give his life for that failure. Joseph Campbell describes the holy fool as the most dangerous person on earth, the most threatening to all of our hierarchical institutions. He says, the holy fool stands outside of the power of the dominant culture. He or she has no wealth. They have nothing to lose, so they do not concern themselves with naysayers. For their cause, they slip right in when no one is looking and turn everything upside down. Beware of finding a Jesus who actually is very congenial to you. Look at this saying, from moving a camel through the eye of the needle to blessing the poor, congratulations to the poor. God's domain belongs to you. That was pretty subversive. So is the thought to love your enemy, to turn the other cheek. Holy foolishness. Holy foolishness. Free from all social constraints, fools can utter unutterable truths. Freud tells us, there's dignity in humor. Humor fends off the possibility of suffering. It is a way of gaining mastery over our imperfections by using a lighter touch. How many of you played this morning? Look around. Nobody played? Thank you. One out of how many played this morning? Two? I could count on you, Wenda. I bet it was artful magic. Yes, yes. The great joy of play is that you free your fantasies. You unleash all those constraints of conformity and allow your imagination to go wild. In that state of childish play, we actually release our prisons. We open the box. We step out of the box and we allow ourselves to have pretty good ideas. Society owes a huge debt to the play of imagination. Just the list of inventions that were created in play and stepping out of the box had us arrive at this most progressive technological age in the history of humanity. Now, I did not play this morning either. I come from New England. I am Puritan through and through. I live in a community where all the houses are white. God forbid a neighbor paints their house colorfully. Does not happen. So, I have totally internalized the guilt, the sin, all of that judgment of too much frivolity that makes us pretty boring. Now, one of the things that, and you're all going to laugh at, I consider playing is doing laps in the pool. And that's on my cutting edge, right? Okay. So I do laps, and I religiously count them, because you have to go 38 to make a mile. And it's only a mile that defines a good workout, right? So there I go. And then it's around 5 that I go, is this 4 or 6? And then I think, well, I have to make it 4, because if I make it 6, I might miss one. So I am compulsive about my lap counting until I went to India last summer. I indulged myself in joining a fitness place, which are really, really inexpensive in Pune, so I could justify it. And I swam every day. I do my yoga classes in the morning or the afternoon, and whichever was not class, I swam. And I didn't count laps. I did a few porpoise dives, and I did on my back, and I did my old ballet legs and things. I had a great time, and I never counted laps. And I found that I was more relaxed, more flexible for my yoga classes, and I was generally just happy. Until the day, in the locker room, another English-speaking person said to me, I don't know if she was from New England or not. I did not ask. So how many laps did you do? And I went, I was here for about an hour. Oh, an hour. You must have done way over 38. And I went, did I? How many did I do? The next 3 days, I was counting laps. I was right back into that achievement, disciplined work mode until I went, this sucks. So I went back to porpoising and enjoyed the rest of my time in India. Refreshed, renewed. Now, the majority of the world's religions agree with the Puritans, right? How many religions right now are doing a resurgence in a fundamentalist way about no drinking, no singing, no dancing, no sex, idleness is sin, and there's a pretty strong incentive. I mean, eternity in fire can get your attention. We don't have that eternal damn fire So, what keeps us from playing? What keeps our attention on that sinful category of idleness? I think it's the Hindus who are the only one who actually endorse all of the things the other religions consider sinful. I mean, their sacred scripts are pretty hot. They describe a lot of things explicitly. Sudhir is waving his hand. He's excited. Yep. Stop there. The Upanishads offer us very explicit instructions on how to enjoy and pleasure ourselves. And one of the Sanskrit words they use is lila. Lila is a much richer word than the English translation of play, because it's about divine creativity, surrender to bliss, and things that we do not even have words for. For many years, lila was my license plate, trying to remind myself that I could escape that Puritan background. So, it's also about the balance between destruction and creation. Because only when you're willing to destroy Kali, the goddess of destruction, only then can you reemerge, sort of that phoenix idea of coming out of the flames. Lila is freedom. It's about delight, enjoyment, the playfulness of eternity, the gods and the goddessness. It's about spontaneity, disarming other people with your frivolity. But it's also about bringing yourself to spiritual maturity, fruition, becoming who it is you were born to be. It takes risk. That destructive part of lila is risk-taking. Who wants to risk being the fool? Who wants to be judged, condemned, tortured for stepping outside of the box? How many of you will have your taxes done on April 15th? Who would risk filing an extension? I'm there. The jester, the fool, challenges us to step out of the box, to truly enjoy our living. The fool is often depicted as lazy, when in reality, the fool is working very hard to turn work into fun, to lighten the burden of the mundane, to make it possible to be more productive and enjoy it. The fool wants us to laugh at our paradoxes, to laugh at the dilemmas and the challenges that face us every day, to actually give us the stamina, the strength, and the courage to provoke change. We create and sustain lila in our lives when we follow our dreams, when we don't decide that mastery is all about studying something for a little bit longer, getting another degree, learning a new technique, and practicing longer. There was a show on NPR this week about our brains, hidden brain, and talked about what sleep does and how you actually integrate everything you've practiced in your sleep. So that if you practice too hard, you won't get it. You need to sleep and dream to be able to integrate what it is you've been practicing and exploring. So, we should all go home and take a nap after the service today, and then everything we've enjoyed will come into our bodies and we will internalize it. Naps are important. It takes a lot of courage to stand on your head. In a yoga class, the most difficult thing for people is to kick their leg up, afraid that wall is not there to catch them. Kicking it up. And it's not about strength. It's not about technique. It's about risking looking foolish. And how many times you will fall over safely on your cushions and look foolish before you can actually get those legs up there. Easter arrives via the calendar and the moon in conjunction with Passover. But if we're going to really invite a cultivated state of Easter, where we're going to resurrect ourselves from whatever tomb it is we've been sitting in, glumly, resigned to our fate, bored, unhappy, angry, afraid, then we need to do something that cracks open that winter husk, that allows the seed to sprout. Easter can be a state of mind that we can miss if we have judgments about the theology. If we're going to discover the gifts of spring, of Easter, of the balance offered in the equinox, then we have to risk being a fool. Fool does not have that clear, I don't know, strong voice of the sage. Fools are carefree, irrational, impulsive, and they propel us with a surge of energy that just says, go for it! Don't hold back! Risk looking foolish. Have the courage to eat a mango in bed. Don't be afraid to fall off the abyss. The edge of the cliff is an invitation. People may think that you're foolish, that you don't know what you're doing. And that's the moment when your subversive inspiration will catch them off guard, and you will provoke something no one could have imagined. Change. People who think the fool doesn't know what she's doing are not watching. So disengage your brain. Risk being a fool. Swim naked. Don't count the laps. Engage your soul deeply. Dare to be happy when everyone around you is screaming, fire, fire. I don't want to say that too loud, just in case you think that there is one. There isn't. Even though I have people watching the candles back there. Even if you are an agnostic, a humanist, or an atheist, Easter has a message. Discover that message of holy foolishness, Leila, Passover. Escape whatever enslaves you and discover the truth, the real truth, capital T, life is delightful.